Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and this week, for the last episode of the season, I'm joined by two of my favourite podcasters. As host of Self-Care Club, they test out infinite types of self-care, so you don't have to, and report back on what works. Please welcome Lauren Mishkin and Nicole Goodman.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, it's lovely to see you. Sharing a mic, just really committing to the being a co-host is the closest type of relationship.
Actually, we keep talking about needing to get a mixing desk and we keep forgetting, hence why we're now sharing a mic. We share everything these days.
Because I remember when your show started, and I think we did like a fun bit of cross promotion in the early days, and that's how
we first
virtually met. And I've got to see it grow, but also like your dynamic has become such a like mainstay of what people follow the show for. And like, even, you know, I was saying to you at the podcast show, the clips that are shared, they're now as much about you two winding each other up as they are about anything to do with self-care.
Absolutely, if not more so.
They're actually nothing to do with self-care. That's the funniest thing. So the guy that edits them for us, he always picks when we're just, you know, laying into each other, or they are very funny. And you're right, it has become the real heart of the show. But Lauren and I met, and then we started the podcast within weeks. So wow. I think as the show's grown, so has our relationship and our friendship. So what you're picking up on is absolutely spot on, because we've got to know each other so much better.
That's so
now
lovely.
We are basically married.
No, but also I can imagine, you know, you're getting to know a lot about each other's lives very quickly, because you're taking a new form of self-care every week. Some of them are obvious, some of them are real wacky, and you're both having to like dive in and report back. So you're going to hear a lot about the inner workings of each other's lives, and I'm sure relationships.
Yeah, and we're having conversations with each other that, you know, some of these conversations we wouldn't have with our closest friends, because you're not having to have them, or you're not exploring those sorts of situations. So there's pretty much nothing we haven't discussed now.
But what we have figured out is that the relationship, a romantic relationship, works in a vacuum. Yes. It always works differently. So let's say we're doing a week of how to have a difficult conversation. It works very differently in your romantic relationship, whether that's just a partnership, a marriage, whatever it is, in relation to everywhere else, in a working environment, in a friendship, anywhere else. It's just all the different rules apply.
It's a micro universe, all of its own marriage. So we it's hard to put the marriage into the subject.
Yeah.
It's always separate.
I sometimes want to push back on this stuff, because I often am the friend that people want the opinion of, and I love to give an opinion. And so I don't want it to be true, but I think there is some truth to it, you know, that actually, like, maybe in the early stages when your friends go on awful dates and they tell you about them, and you turn around and you're like, and why is it you're going on another date with this person? What possible redeeming factor have you failed to mention about this shit show of a date? But maybe there is that kind of switch that then, when it kind of, you settle into the routine of it, that distinct pattern of behaviors, the way that you tick as a unit, you know, maybe none of us can kind of have an external insight into that.
And I also don't believe you should ever get involved in other people's marriages unless you are specifically asked to become involved. And even then, you've got to tread carefully.
Even then, and I think you're right, because it's when you're in it that you understand the absolutely inner workings of it. And it's such an intimate, close relationship. And also, what? So you give your opinion and then you're like, oh, leave them. And then they don't. And then that opinion is out there forever, which is not helpful for your relationship moving forward with that person. Well, I did have a friend who was in a long-term relationship, in a really long-term, very toxic relationship. Mm-hmm. And every time they would talk to me or cry or, you know, we would have a deep and meaningful conversation about what was going on, I wouldn't really give my opinion, but I would just listen. And I was desperate to say, oh my God, get rid. This is not working. You can do so much better. What the hell are you doing? And then they broke up a few times. And every time they broke up, I was literally like throwing a party. I was so excited. And then they'd get back together. And then I was like, okay. And they knew how I felt because it was out there. But I always said, look, I support you. And if you think you can make this relationship work, then I'm here for you and I will do my best. But, you know, it wouldn't take long until it all crashed and burned again. But now it's done for good. And I'll be honest, I've let rip on what I thought of it.
Well, this is it, right? It's maybe that's the answer, is like a certain level of kind of sensitivity of not thinking we have a one word answer of stay or leave, but instead kind of, yeah, bearing with our friend and understanding, like, there's a whole set of reasons why you could be staying in this.
There is. And also, people have different tolerance levels for different things. What I might tolerate in a marriage, someone else might think is a complete deal breaker, and yeah. vice versa. Yeah. So you don't know what makes people tick and what makes people stay and what makes people leave. And I would suspect that marriages are broken up for reasons that I would think are extremely minor, that they might feel are enormous.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
For sure. And before, you were just so insightful about marriage back in the before times. Do you have some stories for me?
I'm going to let Nicole kick off.
Well, I was a single girl about London town for many years before I met my husband and settled down. So there were...
Are you meaning to paint it like it was 100 years ago? You're really not that old.
It did feel like 100 years ago, Bobby. I'm not going to lie to you. I think it was over 20 years ago. So that is quite a long time, isn't it? It was definitely before the days of social media, thank God.
And the apps, lucky you.
The apps had just started to come in, mm-hmm. just. People were signing up to them as I met Adam. And Adam was, funnily enough, he was on one of the apps. And I remember, this isn't my story, but now it's come up. I remember one of my friends saying, we'd been dating for about a month and we really liked each other and we were seeing each other loads. And my friend called me up and she said, I just want you to know that I've seen him on the app. And you can see when they were last active, apparently. Mm-hmm. She said, and he was on the app yesterday. And I just felt sick, because I just thought, oh my God, he's looking around. What am I going to do? And it was too early in the relationship to have a where are we at chat. Mm-hmm. It just didn't feel quite the right time. But I was so anxious about it that I think about a week later, I plucked up the courage to say, look, are you seeing anyone else? My friend told me she saw you on the app. I was really honest. And he said, I went on the app to shut my account down. So there you go. So it's not always what you think it is. But the story I was going to tell you was, we used to go out every Thursday night in town, in Soho. It was always a big night. And there were two guys that I was kind of interested in. And one of them was this very cool guy. And I used to see him around. And he was never particularly interested in me. But I just found him really charismatic and really fun. And he never asked me out or anything. But I used to see him every week. And we'd flirt. And it just wouldn't ever go anywhere else. And then there was this other guy who was a bit more straight-laced. He was like a banker. He sort of ticked a few boxes and he was handsome and he was polite and all of those things that you're supposed to be really into. Anyway, he asked me to go out with him. So we went out on a night out on a Thursday in Soho. And we went out for dinner and then we went to a bar or a club after. I can't remember which one it was at the time. No one would have heard of it because it was so long ago. And as I walked into the bar, we'd had a few drinks over dinner. We were getting on really well. I think we'd even had a snog over dinner. We were getting on really well. Anyway, as I walked into the bar, on my way to the toilet, I saw this other guy that I really fancied and had fancied for months. And as I came out the loo, he was waiting for me. He's like, oh, I saw you go in. Anyway, I can't really remember the details.
Not creepy at all, waiting outside the loo for you.
No, I was delighted. It was like a really busy bar. And we were having a little flirt and everything else. Next thing I know, we were snogging away, right? I'm on a date with someone else. Snogging away. And then the guy that I was on a date with comes up to me, like literally pulls me away from this guy and quite rightly was really annoyed and said, what are you doing? And I said, sorry. And
he waited outside a loo for me. What could I do?
You see, he was a proud. Anyway, he stormed off and left. And I ended up having a great time with this guy.
There you go. Yeah. Turning water into wine.
And you know what? Turning water into wine. You know what? I do not regret it, Bobby. It wasn't my finest moment, but I am so pleased that I had that snog outside that toilet.
You know what? I love that. I also love that as like the anti kind of dating anxiety story that so often we get really caught up in, like, how do I come across perfectly? How am I the very best version of myself? And then you come across people who are... A, everyone else is thinking that, so no one's really analysing you as much as you're analysing each other, yourself. Definitely. And then B, there's always a guy like that that's like, no, I'll take you exactly as you are in this moment.
You know, it took me about 2 weeks to pluck up the courage to send him a proper apology text, which I did, and he never replied. And I never, ever saw him again.
Well, that's fine. You did your due diligence.
Funnily enough, he never asked me out for dinner again. I don't know why.
I know. Yeah, we'll just drop him a message now. Let's get some feedback 20 years later. And then by contrast, you have a story, Lauren, of hope, you tell me.
I'm saying it's a story of hope because it's a convoluted tale. But
yeah, like, I just hope I get through it. That's what the hope is.
I'm going to try and distill it down. I went to a cross-dressing party. I mean, this is how long ago it was, when boys always dressed as boys and girls always dressed as girls. It was many decades ago. I was dressed as a schoolboy in some little hot pants and a cap, and I was very sort of thin and cute then. And I was also very preoccupied with another boy who was at the party. But little did I know, someone else was at the party and he spotted me, but I was a little too busy with someone else to spot him. Fast forward 6 months, and the cross-dressing party boy said, "It's my cousin's birthday. Do you want to come?" I had just broken up with my long-term boyfriend. I had nothing to do and I was single. So I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll come to the party." So I go to the party. I meet the cousin. I quite like his face. He obviously
on,
quite
sorry,
like mine.
Which boy are you with? The one you were busy with or the one that spotted you?
No, I'm at a party.
The one she originally likes.
The same boy then invites me to his cousin's birthday party. Right. The host of the cross-dressing party. The boy I was involved with at the cross-dressing party is a separate boy, not mentioned.
That was just bragging.
That was just, momentary fun. So I go to the birthday party. I meet the boy. I like him. I think he likes me.
Is he still a boy at this point?
He's a man.
You're like a young 47.
20-something. Okay, young 20-something. Right. So we go on a date. After the date, he goes to see his grandma the next day and says to her, "I think I've met the girl who's going to be the mother of my children." He didn't tell me this till a long time later.
Of course he didn't tell you that. I would have freaked out.
Quite right.
Yeah, they're standing outside the toilet.
So we went out for 3 weeks, sort of casually dated. Then my boyfriend wanted to get back together with me, so I dumped him and I said yes, and I got back together with the boyfriend. This was a disaster, ongoing disaster. A year later, I'm single again, and he asked his cousin, "Is Lauren single?" "Yeah, yeah, they've broken up, it's done, it's dusted." He asked me out again, so we go out. We date again for like 3-4 weeks, and one night at dinner, I sat down and said, "Do you know what, I can't do this. I have never been single and I just kind of don't really want a boyfriend or a relationship, and it's done." And I dumped him again. He wasn't very happy. And I kind of trucked on with my life. 6 months later, I go to a bar in Soho. Also not bother naming it because it was so long ago. It probably doesn't exist. It's probably an office now. And he is standing at the bar as I walk in with another girl.
Was he? Were you on his Find My iPhone?
There were no such thing as iPhones. There were no iPhones. So he's standing above another girl and I think, oh, he's obviously found someone that's very sweet. I didn't want to interrupt them. I was a bit embarrassed after having dumped him twice. I go to the loo. I come out the loo. He's standing outside the loo. There's a thing on it.
That's obviously a move I did not know about. That's where I've been going wrong.
This was before dating apps and Snapchat and Twitter and dick pics. So you had to be standing outside.
Loitering was your main move.
Loitering was the dating move. I don't think he was loitering. I think we just happened to come out the loo at the same time. And I was like, oh, hi. How are you? Bit awkward.
Oh, do what romantic timing, just, you know.
Yeah, oh, we've just
matching bar week, movements. It's what you want in a relationship.
So it was a bit like, whatever, go home. The next night, I'm out again. I'm young, so I'm out a lot. I'm at a club. It was called I Seen It.
Is this going to be the theme of this episode?
I don't know.
You're anyway, trying to convince everyone you're both ancient. You're not. I've had older guests on the show.
It was a club called Iceni. It was in Soho, I think. It was like four stories. And basically every room had a different DJ and different music was playing. So the idea was you kind of like filtered into the room that you liked. I went with my friend and we kind of just got there. We'd been there about 10 minutes. And I said to him, "I just want to go into this room. I don't know why. I just want to go into this room." I go into the room. The room is empty apart from the same guy, just him and me in this room.
I mean, if the universe is not screaming at this point, I don't know what is.
Which was exactly what I thought. I thought this is utterly pointless, like fighting this now, because, well, for whatever reason, the universe is putting us together. So I apply for a job in America. This is how long ago it is, Bobby. I write a CV on a floppy disk. Do you even know what a floppy disk is? Okay. For listeners that don't know, it's like a physical disk that goes into a computer, and that was what you wrote stuff on. I wrote my CV on the floppy disk, and I'm about to apply for this job in America, and I realize, oh my God, it's on this guy's computer, on his floppy disk. So very embarrassing that I have to get in touch. I'm like, listen, embarrassing, I'm sorry, it's a bit awkward. I'm used to my CV, and it's on your floppy disk. He's like, sure, if you want to go out for dinner with me, you can have your floppy disk.
Good for him. Good for him.
This is 3 years after the first date. I'm like, okay. So we go out for dinner.
Well, to be fair, you were trying to move to America just to stop running into him. So you really weren't obeying the universe.
I was trying to leave the country. So we go on a few dates. And anyway, I get offered this job. And we went out one night, and it was a summer's night, I remember. And he's like leaning quite casually against the bonnet of his Range Rover at the time. And I said, you know, I've got the job, and I'm going to go to the States and take it. And he just looked at me and went, no, you're not. You're staying here with me. And I did, Bobby. And I married him, and I had 3 children with him. And it's still all going on 25 years later.
You're still running into him.
He's everywhere. You know, about all these years, he would go to his, like, mum and dad and say, this girl, like, I'm in to pin her down. And her dad was like, persistence beats resistance. And, you know, he knew what he wanted, and he just waited and bowed his time and went for it. And succeeded.
Wow.
That's my story of hope.
Nice.
There you go. And you know what? There is a kind of trend there that I noticed that, like, for whatever reason, it tends to be the men in these relationships who do have this epiphany of, this is the one for me. And sometimes I'm a bit kind of doubting of it, because I've been the other side of that with friends of mine, where I'm like, is that the woman for you? Or is she just the most beautiful woman that agreed to a date with you? Or is it just that you're finally ready to commit to a relationship for more than 2 weeks? You know, I'm always like, what is the context to this epiphany? But
I've listened to your show, Bobby, a lot. And I think you're a little, if I may say, a little cynical sometimes.
Ooh.
And I would like to say that when you know, you know. And if you don't know, or you're not quite sure, then you don't know. When you know, you know. I knew.
No. Hold on. You didn't. To call you back in reverse, you didn't know.
Yeah.
This the running theme of your relationship history, as I'm hearing it.
I wasn't ready.
Is it's whatever your whole story was defined by, like, oh, this guy saw me and this guy bumped into me and this guy said, you've got to go on a date or you're not going to America. Like, I don't know if there was a great deal of autonomy in some of this. I mean, the story started off with, I like this guy, but this other guy noticed me, so...
Yeah. Oh, he's called you on it, hasn't he?
I didn't see him at the party the first time. He saw me, but I never saw him.
That's what happened. I didn't know he was there.
I have to tell you, I did know. With my husband... And on the second date, he came to pick me up in a taxi. And as I got in, there was just this flood of something that came over me. And I just thought, I am mad about this guy. And I did not know him at all. Not at all. So I did know. But I think there's so many contributing factors, mm-hmm. aren't there? People come to relationships a lot later. There's a lot of, you know, there's children involved. There's lots of other things to consider. I just don't think it's as straightforward as it used to be. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think the apps help. I don't know. I was never in a position to be doing the apps, so I don't know. But it feels very full of
trolls.
Tricky stuff to navigate.
No, it is. So go on then. Let's hear. Do you think I've not met those people because I'm too cynical to realise them, or do you think the right one for me is round the corner?
Yes, the latter.
Okay, so. By that logic, do I get to just stay cynical and they're going to wake me up out of it?
Yes.
Okay.
The thing is that when you fall in love, though, it kind of takes over everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you're in such a different state of consciousness that actually the cynicism just kind of dissipates, because you're so filled with chemistry and endorphins, and it's supposed to be like that. So you're not meant to think that rationally, are you? You're just supposed to go with the emotions of it.
Yeah. No, this is probably what it is for me, that, like, I've kind of become jaded from enough experiences that I don't want to repeat. And therefore, I'm now in a place where in some ways, I would sell it as a good thing, because partly, yes, cynicism can make for good podcasting content sometimes.
Absolutely. I made a whole career on that.
If you went into every self-care thing and believed in them straight away, it'd be a much shorter episode. Like,
do you know what I said to her the other day? I said to her, I love that she's called you out as a cynic, because to be honest, to no one, it does take... I hope that makes you feel a bit better, Bobby, because I actually said to her the other day, do you think that when I bring a practice to you, you could just not roll your eyes and just say yes? Why do I always have to talk you into everything?
Because what we're learning about me is I do need to be talked into everything. Yes. Marriage, not moving to America, trying out a crystal face roller.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what the stakes are. Still need convincing.
Doesn't matter. I still need a little bit of bursting into it.
Yeah, and so I guess that's where I'm at, where it's like, I actually, for me, the way I'm going to sell it to you is that I have standards now with relationships, and I really needed to have some for a long time. And now I have them. So now it's a bit more, okay, convince me, because I'm good at being single. I'm busy doing self-care. I'm well pampered. I'm looking after myself. I've got a lovely life. I've got great friends, work I enjoy. And so if you're going to come in as a lovable juggernaut, what are you bringing to the table?
And, you know, I have a friend who's single. She's been single for many years as well. And what I'm hearing in both of you of what you've just said, Bobby, is that she, like yourself, I think, has learned really solid boundaries. She's learned about what she will accept and what she will not. And the minute she gets a sniff of it, she just gets rid now. She doesn't text them back or whatever it is, whatever the mode of communication is. And actually, what she's noticed is that from the second that she started to create some self-love, some self-worth, self-esteem and boundaries, all of those things, you know, she's getting better, I wouldn't say better quality men coming into her life, but better, more aligned, people that are much more aligned with what she is looking for. And she has better quality dates out of it. She has a better time. They might not necessarily be the love of her life, but she has some really good conversation and some really good fun. And she said, from the minute that I started to bring in those boundaries, her dating life improved.
Sounded like someone with a teacup just above the mic.
She has spoken the truth. I would just add one thing to that. I think all that is amazing and brilliant and good and solid. And yes, absolutely.
But
I do think it's possible to get to a point where you become unmalleable. And I have a couple of friends who are, you know, mid-40s, never married, but they are so set in my life, my ways, my this, my that. It's almost impossible for anybody to be able to come in, for them to make room for anyone to come in, because they've built such a kind of full, complete circle. There's no space. And I do think as we get older, we become less able to compromise, less able to bend to other people. I think when you meet and marry quite young, you kind of grow together.
You do. And sometimes you don't grow
together. And sometimes you don't. And that's a disaster.
Sometimes you very much grow apart. But I actually think as you get older, because I've watched it with my friend, you become so much more in tune with what you want and don't want. And I think that's brilliant and important. So
I agree, but leave enough malleability and space for somebody who may surprise you, who may be very not what you expected to come in.
Well, then you have to work on what your non-negotiables are, right? So if someone's going to be disrespectful on your time or things that would just absolutely not work for you, then I think it's really important to uphold those values and uphold those boundaries with yourself. And not shut yourself up, of course, but it's a very fine line between allowing things that you don't want in your space and making space for the things that you do.
I agree.
And I would add, I see where you're coming from, Lauren. I think maybe for me, I would add that part of the answer there is rethinking how we see relationships. And so I've definitely come across that in friends where they've got to a point where they're really, you know, getting down about like, oh, actually, yeah, is a relationship compatible with my life? And sometimes it is that their life is a full. Sometimes it's that they, you know, travel a lot for work, or they're not sure that they kind of want to do the living with somebody or the kids, or, you know, they're questioning different expectations. And it's good to see that that's kind of expanding. what constitutes a relationship is getting so much broader. And so therefore, maybe it is a thing where, like for me, for example, I'm not sure if I want to live with a significant other. I love living with my cat. I love living with my flatmate. The stakes are a lot lower. I would happily see that person all the time. I would happily have somebody stay over, but I don't need to cohabit. I've been there, done that. It's not something that I'm necessarily striving for. But there probably would be people out there that be like, oh, but is that a real relationship? Are you committing? Are you only one foot in, you know?
But well, that's just convention, isn't it? And mm-hmm. it's just what we've been sold as normality or a conventional relationship. But it's about what brings you contentment and fulfillment and happiness.
And you also may meet somebody who you're mad about and is mad about you, who's like, you know what, Bobby, I actually just want to wake up with you every morning and go to bed with you every night. And I want our lives to be as one, and I want to share a toaster with you. And you might be like, great, actually, yes, I want that too. We don't know until these situations present.
Yeah, because your answers are, let them decide for you. They'll know what you want. Yeah.
Do you want a white?
It's so interesting, though. I wonder if that's like behind the scenes of what makes you tick, because you're such a strong and powerful character in how I know you. But then maybe behind the scenes in your own home, you're like, oh, actually, this is the place I take the seat.
We just had an argument the other day.
She is not submissive. Can I just say, she always identifies as compliant and submissive. She is neither of those things. I wouldn't want her to be, but I always say to her, you know, having you as my business partner, I have to bring my A game all the time, because if I want something, I have to fight my corner. And I love that she makes me do that, because it never gets boring and it never gets stale. But my God, there is nothing submissive about you, woman.
We were talking about the reboot of Sex and the City this week, right? And Just Like That reboot. And I said, to Nicole, I hard relate to Charlotte. The look I got, she was like, you are much less Charlotte than you think you are.
You are.
You haven't
updated your file. I think the file that you have of the idea of you is from a long time ago. And you've grown into yourself and evolved much more. It's a good thing.
There are more floppy disks about the truth of you. You just haven't found it. There's an extended CV out there.
Listen, there's 200 episodes on it.
Skills include loves to argue. But no, but I do wonder if maybe there is a different side of you when you're at home. And you're like, actually, I'm out in the world fighting my corner. And when I come home, I want someone else to decide what we're eating or decide that we're together.
I will just leave it at that. I'm married to a very alpha male and I would not have it any other way. I like it. Same with you, by the way. But you also like it, because you'd eat anyone else up for dinner.
Right. And when I talk to her husband about Lauren, and he's like, she says she's compliant. I wish she bloody was just some of the times. And she's not like that at all in her marriage. No,
I think I am.
You're not.
Interesting. Anyway. I think jury's out. I'm starting to see Nicole's perspective on this. the more we talk about it, the less I'm agreeing with my own analysis. And actually, I'm like, you know, he had to stalk you and, air quotes, bump into you so many times, take a floppy disk hostage just to get another date. So, maybe that's what it took. And so as we start to wrap up, let's circle back on self-care. So where does self-care fit for you in your relationship, but also your relationship with yourselves?
Oh, that's a great question, Bobby.
We'll leave out relationship with each other, because we'll be here all day.
Yeah, exactly. The answer is everywhere. And I think if you're, you know, self-care is just the act of taking care of yourself, however that looks. And so the things that we find the most transformative in terms of our relationships with others and our relationships with ourselves are all the mindset and mental practices, like boundary work, like learning how to say no, like figuring out the things that you will and won't accept in your life, like learning how to have a difficult conversation. I mean, we did a week of that on the show, and actually it can be really transformative in your relationships, in your life, just learning the skills of how to speak your needs and to communicate effectively with the other person, whether that's a romantic partner or your boss at work. These life skills become an intrinsic part of our self-care tool bag.
Mm-hmm. And as someone who's single, that is a worry I have at times, that people get into a relationship and they abandon self-care and instead are like, oh, well, I'm not feeling looked after enough in my relationship. It's put all on the other person. And would you say there's a happy medium there?
I think it is your own job to look after yourself. It is not somebody else's job to keep you healthy, to keep you happy, to keep you safe. It is always your job. And that does start with a lot of self-care and a lot of self-love. And it is an act of love and an honourable act to take care of yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, financially, socially, in all these different ways. And it does come from a place of self-esteem and self-love, for sure. It's not being selfish. And that's what we're trying to pinpoint all the time, that actually, if you're not looking after yourself, then you can't look after anybody else. And you can't be the best version of yourself when you're depleted, exhausted, stressed, anxious, all of those things.
And I think if you want to be in a healthy, nice relationship where you both communicate and you're both feeling good, you have to do that work on yourselves in order to be good with each other. I want to be a good mom and I want to be a good wife, and I can't expect him, who has his own job and his own life and his own self to be getting on with, to be dealing with everything to do with me, to be worrying about what I'm eating, what I'm thinking, how I'm feeling all the time. We both have a responsibility to be healthy people who take care of ourselves in order to be there for each other. I think it's really important.
Yeah, no, we definitely agree that that person can be additional care for you, but you've got to have the basics covered. You know, you've got to like know yourself, look after yourself, like you say. You've got to have that groundwork in, and then that person can be extra. And I think that's also the answer for me when relationships don't work out, you know, or if you really want one but you don't have one. Well, if you've got your basis covered, that's great insulation.
And I think that's what I was, yes, that's exactly what I was meaning by my friend that I mentioned before, who's been single for a long time. She's learned to love herself. She's done the work. And now, of course, she would love to meet somebody, but it's okay that she hasn't, because yeah, she's coming from a much happier, more settled place in herself. So she's not wanting or needing somebody to fill any void, because she's filled that for herself and she's found out what works for her. And I think that is an integral part in any relationship, and most of all the relationship you have with yourself. And bringing that level of self-esteem to another relationship will only help aid that relationship.
Yes, agreed. And, you know, ultimately it sounds like she's in that place of, this person would need to love me at least as well as I love myself. That's a nice bar to have. I want to draw in kind of what I see as a sort of opposite to self-care in a lot of ways, which is this concept of the mental load. And this is often talked about in terms of marriage and in terms of family, and how certain things can be disproportionately put on women. So that's to do with like expectations around like housework, keeping the home, what the expectations are of like you being a wife versus somebody being a husband. But also specifically the mental load is about the mental side of it. So that's the most fucking A equals B sentence I've ever said. State the obvious. The mental load. It's about stuff to do with mental. Yeah. But what I mean is it's all these things that, yeah, that can be a strain when it comes to your mental health.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, doing the bulk of the worrying about the kids, doing the bulk of the, oh, my house isn't tidy and someone's coming over and that's going to reflect badly on me because people expect that to be my job.
But listen, I will hold my hands up and say I set up my household and my life and how everything runs in the way that I set it up. And I am in my mid-40s, and what I see now...
Because you're so passive.
Because I'm so passive. But what I see now around me are households and families and marriages that work in many sort of different and slightly more, maybe more balanced ways than they do in my household. But I take responsibility because that's how I started, and so that's how it continues. It's very hard to do 25 years and then go, yeah, actually, you're in charge of Ocado now. I mean, of course I could, but I'm not going to, because, you know, the way things are is the way things are.
You don't trust him. You don't trust him to do the Ocado shop like you do.
I don't.
Because she's so passive, as you can tell.
Because it has to be the correct laundry capsules, Bobby, or what would...
No, but, you know, not to call you out, but it is an interesting phenomenon, right, of like, we have these kind of stereotypes of what gender roles are in relationships, particularly in marriages, And so often, under even the slightest scrutiny, they don't hold up, right? So this idea that, like, the man of the household, he's the one that makes the decisions. But then most people just look at their own parents and they think, well, was that the case growing up? Who was really pulling the strings? And it's usually not the man. Yeah. But they're just
it's
getting
not,
the credit
but you must
for
always,
it.
But you must always give the illusion that they are. That's the beauty.
And that's how you're a good wife. I think you've just convinced yourself you're something out of The Handmaid's Tale.
I'm just going to sit here and shake my head.
Never raise her voice.
You know, you're...
Never.
To anyone listening, this is not true. Okay? She's not true. She is taking the mickey a little bit. And
dogs have invaded the room.
Even the dogs are coming to protest. And so, All right. So, Nicole, tell me for you. How do you manage the mental load of not getting dumped with a disproportionate amount of marriage / family mental energy?
I moan a lot, Bobby. I moan a lot. There's a lot of complaining going on. There's a lot of what he would deem as nagging. I am a raging feminist. I've always had my own business. And now we do this full time and we're very, very busy. So my husband is really supportive of what we do. And he helps out a lot in the house. He empties the dishwasher. He does the washing. He, we went on a work trip last week to Paris. We were away for 3 days. And I said to him before I left, look, I'm not leaving a whole load of frozen meals in the fridge so that you and the kids have got something to eat. Because quite frankly, I'm not playing into that narrative of you can't cope and I have to do everything. And he said, that is not why you're not doing it. I said, no, you're right. I can't be bothered. And he was absolutely perfectly capable. So I think we are finding our own balance with it as I get busier, and it's working really well. We have our bumps in the road, but we both support each other, and I think that is the main thing. And it has always been set up, you know, when we had the kids, that I took a back seat with my career. I was an editorial hairdresser and I was traveling loads and he travels loads. So I took a back seat.
That explains the perfect hair.
Thanks. And I set up my own private salon from home so that I was around more for the kids, and that worked for a period of time until it didn't, and I needed to sort of spread my wings again. And he's giving me that space to do it now, and it's really important to me, and it's important. I've got two daughters, so it's important that my daughters see that the man is emptying the dishwasher, that he is very capable. You know, I don't want them to be raised with this narrative either, because it's actually not true.
Yeah. And for Lauren, she gaslights her sons into thinking that she's passive. She's like, this is the woman you want.
I'm not sure my sons would describe me as passive. No one describes you as passive.
They're going to end up with strong-willed wives.
I hope they do. Or husbands, or whoever they may or may not live with. As long as I get a couple of grandchildren, I'll be happy.
zero expectations. Just you must produce.
That's right. And at least one has to be a girl. Okay, that's the deal.
Okay, there we go.
The three of you. No pressure.
And on that note, I think we'll take those as your rules of the game and we'll start to wrap up. If people want to go find your work, hear you test all kinds of, I literally made a list of some of them, things like insect protein, eyebrow stencil kits, mushroom tea, pregnancy. I don't know how you tested that one in a week. And puppy yoga.
Yes.
Have all been self-care that you've tested?
No, we didn't test pregnancy. I mean, we've tested it 5 times between us, but no, not for a week, 9 months each child. But
we were talking about,
I was a doula for 16 years, so we were talking about the listeners writing with their sort of pregnancy and childbirth questions. We did a little mini clinic.
Anyone that wants to listen to the show, just search in Self Care Club anywhere you get your podcasts. We're on Instagram at Self Care Club Pod. We're on TikTok. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. Come join our private Facebook group. We're literally everywhere. Just
get away from us.
You can't get away from us. So please come and find us. We'd love you to check in with the show.
Or just wait outside any sort of public toilet for us to come out and then ask us out. And we'll probably say yes. Or Nicole might snog you, I know.
Well, there we go. What an ending to the season. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.